Gita says that the soul is nothing but a part, an ansha, a part of that place. Mamiva ansha. Who is that? Of that all omniscient being. So Paramatman at the top, then below it, Prakriti and Purusha. That Purusha is nothing but the jiva and called as the ansha of that. So he is not bound by the gunas of Prakriti. Now what is this Prakriti even of the Sankhyas, which has been borrowed by the Vedanta? It is of two kinds. Namely, one is the Ashtadha Prakriti and another is the Trigunatmika Prakriti. Bhumi Rapo Nalo Vayu Khammano Vidhirevacha Ahankariti Yame Bhinna Prakriti Ashtadha. This eightfold Prakriti, Panchamabhuta, Bhumi Rapo Mano Vayu Sam Mano, Mano Buddhi and Ahankariti. Man, Buddhi and Ahankar added on to the Panchamabhutas, they become the Ashtadha eightfold Prakriti. And then, what is this Trigunatmika? Ye chaiva sattvika bhava rajasa tamasasya matte vedikam nidhi. Know that these two, sattva, rajasa and tamas, they also are from born me. That is what he says. In the Bhagavad Gita itself, I am just making use of the Bhagavad Gita to tell you, to explain to you the Sankhya as well as the Vedanta, you see. So that the Bhagavad Gita makes use of this. The sattvika, rajasa and the tamas bhavas, they are also due to me. And the Ashtadha Prakriti also is due to me. So the Prakriti will be of two types. One is the Ashtadha Prakriti and one is the Trigunatmika Prakriti. He says, there is nothing in the world which is not bound by these three gunas. Which is not bound by these three gunas. The three gunas, sattva, raja and tamas. And therefore, now the author makes a transition from this. If there is nothing beyond the three gunas, then there is no hope for us. We shall be rooming. Either we shall be sattvika, or we shall be rajasa, or we shall be tamasa. No. Nisray vunyo bhavarjuna. Go to that Purushottama. How is that? He is nisray vunyo. He is beyond the three gunas. He is trigunajita. Gunati tasya uchyate. Saha Purushottamaha. Gurati taha sa uchyate. And therefore you become, O Arjuna, nisray vunyo bhavarjuna. You become gone beyond the three gunas, just as Kabir says also. Suno re kon gurkha, tino guno upar jana. You go beyond these three gunas. That is the mystical tinge in the Bhagavad Gita. He has gone beyond that. Trigunas, nisray unya. How are we to go beyond? So he says, nirvando nitya sattvastho nisray unya bhavarjuna. Nirvandva, go beyond the duality, and nitya sattvastha means remain always on the guna of sattva. Tukaram has also said that. Exactly in the same manner that this sattva, the raja and the tama, beyond that there is sattva, but you should, sattva has a power of its own. It connects the two, you see, because it has got the power of controlling the rajas and tamas, and it has the power of connecting you with God. That is the samarthya. Nitya sattva stho. Nitya, not now. For some time in the sattva and for some time in the, then you are bound by that. So, go beyond even that. Guna, sattva. Sattva also is a binding rope. Guna means rope. And therefore, whether the fetters are made of iron, or of copper, or of gold, they are still the fetters. Jnana sangena badnati, sukha sangena chanagha. The sattva binds you by jnana, by the ankara of jnana, and sukha sangena. Sukha sattva binds you by these two ropes. Sukha sangena badnati, jnana sangena chanagha. You are bound by the pride of your learning, and the pride that you are all happy. These two things, you go beyond that also. And then you will find it is Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva, a name is given. That is, in that Trigunatita. You come to Trigunatita or Nishtray Vunya only when you cross these three fetters. That is, you have overpowered the tama by means of rajas, you have overpowered rajas by means of sattva, but you have overpowered rajas, sattva also by means of रजस्तमश्चा विभूय सत्वम भवति भारत, रज एंड तम का डिफीट करके सत्व का सत्वगुण होता है. एंड देन सत्वम सत्वेन अन्या, सत्वम सत्वेन अन्या, सत्व शुड बी किल्ड बाय मीन्स ऑफ सत्व अलोन एंड देन यू बिकम द त्रिगुणादित्य. दिस इज एग्जैक्टली व्हाट वेदांत सेज ओवर एंड अबव द सांख्यस. So there is nothing in the world. I just see it. There is nothing in the world. From the point of view of Sankhya, there is nothing in the world except the twin, namely Purusha and Prakriti. And all the evolution of the world, immovable and immovable, comes from Prakriti alone. I told you that if you go in the opposite manner, then you will end to the Ugam, to the source of Prakriti, you will find Prakriti alone. Because Purusha is at a far, far distance. You have nothing to do with Prakriti. But later, in the development of the Sankhyas, the later Sankhyas thought that this is not a very satisfactory position. So they invented ingeniously what is known as Mahat. Mahat is the link between Prakriti and Purusha. Mahat meaning intelligence. Or you can translate it by the word, simple word, Buddhi. Buddhi Tattva. Now this Buddhi Tattva comes between Prakriti on the one hand and Purusha on the other. And they say that this is a mirror on both the sides. There are mirrors on, if you have say shaving mirrors, there is one concave on the one side and convex on the other. If you have such mirrors, if you have seen such mirrors, convex and concave. This is on one side and on the other side there is the opposite. So what happens is that Buddhi takes the light from the Purusha. And then it reflects upon the Prakriti. Therefore, I can know something about intellectually, even about God, on account of this, because I have got intelligence in me. You have got intelligence in you, therefore you can have something about, just as Bertrand Russell says, that we can know something about God intellectually. And philosophy are only an instrument of giving us intellectual pleasure. That was what Bertrand Russell says. We need not go by what he says, because he has not gone beyond intellectual pleasure. Who? Bertrand. I feel that he has not gone beyond the concept of pleasure. Why intellectual pleasure also? Because he married at the age of 92, you see, with a girl of 20. That girl was very clever, must have been very clever, because he had left millions of pounds, you see, before him. And she must have thought of the millions of pounds and not of the man. So it was a financial pleasure to her, and it was an intellectual pleasure to Bertrand Russell. But that intellectual pleasure was also not there, because he must have been a stupid person at the age of 92, you see. But apart from that, he finds that intellectual pleasure is there. But no, you buddhe parvastusa, one who is beyond buddhi, you see, buddhi rata, you see, who is that? It is not that music which is final, it is the musician who is final. Similarly, it is not that which the source of pleasure, seek that. So here we find in the Vedanta, they have gone beyond Prakriti, they have gone beyond Purusha, and they have gone beyond the third Purusha, namely Purushottama or the. Now we have imperceptibly going from Sankhya to Vedanta. But there is another also stream, namely of that yoga. And Sankhya and yoga have been bracketed together by some students of philosophy, especially Hiranyaka. He says Sankhya and yoga are twin systems. Sankhya they call as Nirishwara. And yoga is called Seshwara. I do not think what is this. It's useful for examination purposes, but it is not good. Sankhya is. Why do you call it Sankhya as Nirishwara? Has it not mentioned as Purusha is there? Should they mention only as Ishwara as such? Should they have that word, Ishwara? They have mentioned it, Purusha. And yoga, why do you call it Seshwara? When you get a sutra in the yoga sutras, Ishwara Pranidhanat, Va means are. Means, are they not here by implication means an alternative system there? meaning they are indifferent whether God is there or not. Tasya vachakaha pranavaha ishvara pranidhana dva. What does it mean? Dva mean? Or by devotion, meaning by are you go this way or that way, both come to the same thing. If that is the sutra in the Patanjali Yoga, how do you say that it is Seshwara? Yoga is as indifferent to God as the Sankhya is. If at all you have to say that Sankhya is indifferent to God, then say in the same manner that yoga also is indifferent to God because of that sutra, Ishvara Pranidhanat Va, or by the way of devotion, meaning you don't believe so much in delusion. You don't say that it is by the way of devotion only. Have you said that? You have not said it. So you also believe in the same manner as the Sankhyas believe. Call them both as Seshwara, call them both as Nirishwara. And there is justification why here and now, for example, takes Sankhya and Yoga as both as together. You see. Of course, Yoga is decidedly better than the Sankhya. Not for this reason, but for some other reason. The Yoga Sutras has been compiled by one great sage, namely Patanjali. Now this word Patanjali comes from the fact he was just offering his morning prayers, his morning sandhya, you see, and he was giving argya, that is throwing some water to the god of sun, that is sandhya. And when he was pouring some water, he saw, I don't know why, but it is a fact, Patan Anjalo Yasya Saha. He saw whom? He saw a big serpent in his very anjali. You see, when he was giving argya to God, he saw, and what is it? They say, Devo Sas, Devo Hishas, Savyat, Sita Vimalav, Dhatan Hum, Yoga Dath, Yoga Prasht, Yoga Yogtaha. That is what he has praised immediately, that Patanjali says, how this Shesha, this vision of the of serpent, you see, this vision of the serpent, which is fallen in my anjali, while I am giving, let him protect me. How is it? Sita, he has described that Shesha, that vision of the serpent. Sita, he is bright, he is white, and Vimala, Vimala meaning pure. He is both white and pure, meaning thereby the moral and the spiritual, both. Vimala Tanu, whose body is like that, and Yogadaha, Yoga Yuktaha, Yogadaha, Yogadaha means Yoga Dene Vala, who is the giver of yoga, and who is Yoga Yukta, who is born out of yoga. This is very suggestive of the fact that yoga has gone far beyond the Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya is merely intellectual, while yoga is something which has achieved. It is an achievement in yoga. It is not an achievement, it is an intellectual pursuit in Sankhya. So, philosophy is not merely intellectual pursuit, but something you have. It is pointing out the ways towards you. They are the lampposts, no doubt, but they show you the direction simply. They are like signposts on the way. They don't give, this is not a road. You go by that road and you will reach it. You will reach the destination. That is what Sankhya has done. But yoga is the actual practice of something which will make you that, where the destination and the road meet together. The destination ends, the traveler stops there, and the road also stops. All the three, they come at a close. That is yoga, you see. So he says, when you have a vision of this great serpent before you, sure, it's a sign that you have practiced yoga, yoga yukta. And yoga daha, that is, he will be giving you yoga purpose. Yoga kshemam vahamyam, just as he says. Yoga kshemam vahamyam, people consider it as if he will give you food to eat for you. This is the most vulgar translation, you see. I should say, no meaner translation can be done by this. Yoga kshemam means God will give you and sustain you by giving you food. It is not that. Yoga kshemam means, yoga means getting of that which you have not as yet. Yoga daha. And yogkshema means what you have, preserving what you have got. Preserving what you have got already, yoga yukta, and giving you more. So one who has got the vision of serpent before him, be sure, let him be certain on the authority of Patanjali that he has established himself in the yoga of what? Yoga of God. And if one has not, then of course he should follow that man who has got this vision. Let him make a search and find out this man, and then practice in the same way in which Patanjali has practiced. And then he will find that he is established in yoga. Just as you have a probation period, and then the permanence afterwards. Similarly, you become permanent in yoga. You become permanent in the spiritual life. When? At what stage? When you see the self stage. Unfortunately, our scholars in the West, they consider it as serpent, as in a symbol of phallus. They see their sex. It is not that. Sex you can have as you like, but have this also. Namely, try to have the vision of the serpent God. Shesha. It is that which is most important. If you have that shesha before your very eyes, then be sure that you are established in yoga. It is not necessary that you should have asana, pranayama, etc., or the ashtanga is not necessary for you. The ashtanga, especially the pranayama, is the most dangerous thing in you. Most dangerous. People have become mad. I do not know whether Professor Kalla is here or not, whether he agrees with me or not, I don't care. But this is what I find. I have seen persons going by the way of pranayama becoming mad, you see. And so pranayama has been one of the most dangerous things in life. But pranayama is a stay. In the same ashtanga yoga mein pranayama hai. And you write pranayama, you see, as if. Why should you not have it? What are the yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dhyana, dhyana, and samadhi? The last three are the most important. Dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Dharana means you have to hold. What are you holding? You are holding air. You are catching the bhatum. What are you holding? What are you holding as if? Nothing. Ma manusmara yudhyaja. You should hold ma, means Krishna says to Arjuna, ma manusmara yudhyaja. You should hold God in your hand. Dharuni keshava anabhava bale. Tukaram says. You hold the keshava in hand and then bring him by your bhava bale. You see, that is what he says. What do you hold in your hand? I found a person coming from Pondicherry, and Sunday he was there sitting and he was drinking. I asked him, Swamiji, aapko bhashan karna. Then he was looking at me. I don't know what he meant. He was looking simply. He was doing the trataka. I say, if trataka can, you see, bring God, if trataka can bring God, then any the photograph also can bring God. You see, not. Photograph of that man will bring God. It is not that. Foolish things are involved. Foolish, I say. Remember that word. Foolish things are said and taught to us by these yogic, deceitful persons. One says that your tongue should be cut from below and it should be lengthened. Dohan kriya karani chahiye. And then what should be? It should be lengthened. If it is cut from below here, naturally it will be lengthened, and then dohan, that is, you dry every day, that it should be lengthened, and what should, and that the tongue should touch here. Why? Will it enter into the nostrils as buffaloes and cows do it? Buffaloes and cows do it. They put their, very easily their tongue into the nostril. Should we do that? Is it easy function of the tongue to clear one nostrils? Just as the bulls do. Is that the function of yoga? If it is so ridiculous, it is. Is it necessary? Then amrutasra, and then you turn it, and then come into the throat, so that the amrutasra which is going on will not be disseminated, but will come on the tongue. Why is it horrible things? Is it necessary for that? Kabi did it that way. Tukaram did it that way. What saint has cut his tongue from below? No saint has done it. And yet there was the amrita srava, the oozing of nectar on the tongue. Without this, I am just telling you by way of illustration, don't believe these yogic fools. Don't believe them. Believe the saints, believe the sages, believe the philosophers, but not the yogic practices which are going on in the name of religion, unfortunately, in India, you see. What is it? They are deceived. Of course, they may not be deceived with intention. They may be very honest. I don't mean that. But honesty also will lead to hell. If you are honestly believing in a wrong thing, 2 + 2 = 5, are you not deceived? And if you say that 2 + 2 = 5, most honestly I tell you, because I have learned that 2 + 2 = 5, if I tell you, you are also deceived. So honesty is not the touchstone or criterion, you see. It is that which is real. It should be truthful. Not honesty. Honesty will be at least a policy, you see. But it is not truth. May not be truth. Honesty may be truth sometimes, but dishonesty also may be right. If a man believes dishonestly, 2 + 2 = 4, he is better than another who believes honestly that 2 + 2 = 5. A dishonest man is better than an honest person. But be sure that there is truth. Be sure that it is. So I say, it is not the cutting of the tongue from below that will give the Amrita Srav. It is not. It is the singing of the name of God that will give you the Amrita Srav on the tongue. Not anybody. No saint in the world has said this. In India at least, especially the home, as you say, of spiritual life, it has not been said by any saint in India. So this is yoga. And what is the fruit of this yoga? As Patanjali himself says in famous and the most brilliant way, tada drashtuhu swarupe avasthanam. Tada means then, drashtuhu, one who sees, is swarupe avasthanam. This is the high water mark of mystical spirit, of mystical realization. High water mark of mystical realization. Tada drashtuhu, one who sees. One who sees what? One who sees, for example, as we have seen, just the snake, that shesha. If he looks on stairs, it is not something on a black spot, and then look at it. And it will be invisible in course of time. You make the experiment and just see that this dark spot vanishes on account of the tracking. Is it the vanishing of the dark spot that is the end of the whole thing, process? It is not that. It is, yes. Natumam shakyase rashtum anainema svachakshusha. By these physical eyes you will not be able, or you know, to see. Therefore I give you divyandadame che chakshu paschame yogameshwaram. I give you the celestial eye. I give you the intuitive eye by which you will see. And immediately that very moment, paschami devam stavadeva dehe. Immediately that very moment, instantaneously says, I see, yes. He was unable to see, Arjuna was. And Krishna was surprised. How is it that he is not seeing again? He is not. Then Krishna became aware, I have failed to give him the intuitive eye. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yenama upayantite. The same has been said, Arjuna, you cannot see by this physical eye. I give you the power now, the celestial power, my own power I impart to you. And then you see, divyan dadami te chakshuhu. Divya chakshu mai deta hun. Samajhiye, aap dekh le. So immediately he said, instantaneously, Paschami devam savadevadehe sarvam sasa bhuta vishesha sangha. I see everything now in your body. You see, Brahma, Brahmadev, Shankar, and Vishnu, all of them, and everything else here is bringing a long description of what he sees. The whole Java, Prithivyo, Ramantarami, from earth to heaven, I see nothing but you. Don't doubt this. If you doubt the Bhagavad Gita. You may doubt me, but don't doubt Bhagavad Gita. And you should not doubt Bhagavad Gita because there have been experiences even in the recent past. You see, I give you an illustration of it. You read the Uttarpara speech of Sri Aurobindo. And there you find, when he was being tried, and though he was sent to Pondicherry, he was tried there, and he was sent to Pondicherry, because Pondicherry was that government, a French territory. So he was sent out of British India and he was sent to Pondicherry. And before that, what did Aurobindo see? It is written there See, Aurobindo has written there. If Aurobindo also has written falsely, then of course you have no help. You may do whatever you like. But he has written, I don't find such an honest man, such a great yogin, should have deceived us. He says, When I went to go, the bedif, the judge, the counselors on both the sides, the pleaders, the whole audience, the staircases, the corridor, everywhere I found nothing but Krishna, nothing but Krishna. You see, what is that? What is an illusion? Was it an hallucination? A delusion? It was a clear-cut spiritual perception. Before going to Pondicherry, in 1926 probably, he went to Pondicherry, and till his death he was in Pondicherry, within four rooms only. And he came out only at four times in a year. Four times in a year, nothing more. And nobody could see him throughout the year. Only four times he could see. So, but he was there, meditating. And before that, he could have the vision of God as Krishna Rupa. The same was with Vivekananda. Now, if you have any regard for Vivekananda and Sri Aurobindo, then at least believe, you see. I am telling you facts of history, not facts invented by my mind, you see. So in the Uttarpara speech you will find that Aurobindo had the vision before him of Krishna, which goes far beyond. Kabir and Tukaram and Mirabai, they have gone in the past. Probably after some time they will be mythological figures. But this is recent history of Aurobindo and Vivekananda, you see. Vivekananda also has seen Krishna Rupa. And it is just possible that you and I may be able to see it, provided we do and not think only. If our philosophy can teach us to pass from theism to mysticism, then of course it is just possible. If we are not merely intellectual thinkers, but if we are doers of something, then it is possible. It is a question of will and not of feeling, not of thinking, but of will. And not so even of will, but of intuitive reason, intuitive reason. It is the intuition will go back at the core. Thinking, feeling and willing don't make a personality. There is an additional dimension of it, namely the intuitive faculty of man. What is this intuitive faculty? It is a faculty which is where you can not see anything, there you see. If in this hall, for example, you see the benches and the persons in the hall, then you have not seen by the physical. But if over and above this you see God, then it is something that you have seen. That you have seen which is not seen by others. What is inconceivable, what is unforeseeable by others, you have seen it. You have seen God. Whence did he come? By this window or that window? No, he was here, but he was invisible to you. On account of the Jibya Chakshu not being given to you by God. God has not sent his grace, nor any sage or saint has sent his grace. Therefore you could not see. Only you had the physical eyes to see, and therefore you could not see. It is not your fault, but the fault lies in you, because you do not wish to act. You do not wish to get yourself subject to this discipline, the moral, the ethico-spiritual discipline of man, which is given there. And if you go by that ethical spiritual discipline, then surely, at least with when the authority of the saints and the sages and the Bhagavad Gita, I can say that it is just possible. If you want to read Bhagavad Gita, then read Jnanadeva's Bhagavad Gita, Jnaneshwar's Bhagavad Gita, not of anybody else's, not the Gorakhpur editions of 2 NRs. I was surprised. I spent from 1927 to 1970, I must have read the Bhagavad Gita more than 100 times. I must have tried at it not less than 20 years of my life. And one gentleman who is a professor in the college has said, what has Datta done? We can have a Gorakhpur edition of 2 NRs. This is not a fact. This is a fact which I am telling you. And he is teaching philosophy, you see. Now I say, should we not pity that man? I began to read Bhagavad Gita in 1926. I showed some of my writings to Professor Ranade, you see, my spiritual teacher. And he said to me, don't be in a hurry. Read Bhagavad Gita 100 times and then write. I stopped writing. From 1927 to 1970, I was writing and writing, you see, on Bhagavad Gita and reading and reading. I studied all the literature that was possible, and then I have written, you see. To some extent, Prem Mishra also is a witness of it, that I was writing. For 7 to 8 hours I was reading and writing. From so many years, after doing laboring for 40, 45 years, this man who is teaching philosophy even now, today, he says that what is Dakshinadatism? We can have a Gorakhpur edition. It is up to us. Eat it, I say. Eat it, swallow it. Another man is reading Bhagavad Gita for the last several years. The whole of the Bhagavad Gita. What will you get? You pound it and put water in it and swallow it. What is the good of that? What is the good of it?